Hello and welcome to Indonesia dan Lain-Lain, a podcast about everything you need to know about Indonesia. I'm Hayat Indriyatno from Mangga Bay, the environmental news website, previously with the Jakarta Post and Jakarta Globe. And with me today is not my partner in crime, Erin, who's in Thailand for covering the elections there, but we have a special guest today.
Hi,
please introduce yourself.
I am the next host if Erin decides to sign up. Who knows, you know, beware, Erin. My name is Afu. I call myself a policy research analyst.
Wow, that sounds heavy.
It sounds heavy, it does. In one of the international organizations that I can't name on this podcast.
Okay, sebut saja namanya Bunga. Okay, so Alpha's here with me today, and we got a whole bunch of things we want to talk about. Our main topic this time around is gonna be hoax. Okay, obviously that's a big thing in this election, but before we get to that, there's a few news items that we'd like to get into. Obviously, one of the big things that happened last week, or last weekend, yesterday actually, we were recording this on the Monday, so on the Sunday before, the day before, President Jokowi inaugurated the MRT, which is pretty cool. Have you had a chance to ride on it?
No, I've been wanting to.
Yeah, I've been wanting to as well, but apparently the people that have been riding on it have not been on their best behavior.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, so apparently, you know, photos have been circulating of, you know, people having a picnic on the floor of the platform, and people letting their kids hang from the strap hangers and standing up on the seats and whatnot. And there's been a lot of outrage.
Right.
Yeah.
What's your take on it?
My take on it is that, you know, people are going to be people. you know, this is a novelty. I get the feeling that the people taking advantage of, you know, because this is free, right, until the end of the month. People taking advantage of this period to ride the MRT. These are not the people that are going to ride it on the daily, I don't think. These are people, you know, just bringing their kids, their families for, you know, a fun day out.
Technology.
Exactly, right. So, you know, I mean, people have been anticipating this for a while. So, you know, they're going to treat it as a day out. Obviously, this is not how the MRT is meant to be used. And I don't think that's how it's going to be used. Because, I mean, if you look at the busway, you don't see people in the busway shelters, you know, eating, you know, on the floor or, you know, hanging from the ceiling or whatever. So
right. And I'm quite optimistic. I mean, we don't know if they're going to be the daily users of MRT, but I'm quite optimistic that they will learn or adjust to a new etiquette or like culture of using a mass transport system.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we do have precedent with the Transjakarta, and also with MRT, the MRT organization actually issued a sort of a public service video.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you're not missing much. It is the stupidest video ever. They talk about the silliest things, you know, the don't talk loudly on the MRT or don't peep other people's phones or the last one really got to me. Don't wear too much makeup.
What?
Yeah, how does that make sense? What does that mean?
Why? What's their rationale? What did
they
say?
Okay, so they had like this lady who was sitting next to a guy on the MRT bench, and then she had some kind of like foundation brush or whatever it is. I'm not sure what these things are called, and she sort of like flicked it because it must have had too much powder on it, and hit this guy, and she starts powdering herself.
And the moral of the story is put on too much makeup.
Yeah, that is, I don't know. It seems like the weirdest thing.
Interesting.
It's such a specific problem that I didn't.
Did they address the elephant in the room, which is don't bring your food in?
Oh, well, they said that don't eat inside the train. Okay. Well, that's, I mean, I think that's a given. But, yeah. You know, they didn't say anything about don't stand on the seats or don't hang from the strap hangers or don't crowd the exit. I think that should have been a big one, you know, don't crowd the exit for people coming out. But yeah, if you haven't seen that PSA, you're not missing much.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
I'm still gonna look it up just for the fun of the novelty, do not makeup, do not put on too much makeup.
Yeah.
Part. For me, I think the main highlight of the week on the news is I've been fascinated by the New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been following that.
Yes, absolutely.
In the news, so to me, you know, the routine of a mass shooting internationally, I guess, is quite common, right? You talk about the, first of all, you talk about the shooting, and then you talk about the victims and kind of trying to console the families.
And then you look at background, motive, that sort of stuff.
And all sort those sorts of stuff. And oftentimes, you know, there's lack of clear conviction and leadership from the top leader of the country. And Jacinda Ardern, despite being a young, very young female politician, I think have really shown shown the whole world on how you, you know, you heal, you help lead the healing process of the world together. Because this is not just a New Zealand problem, but almost like the entire Muslim community and beyond, you know, the community of other religions as well, who also sympathize with what happened. And I really admire how New Zealand as a society also, you know, moves forward immediately to the real policy action.
Like
what should be done to control guns.
I thought that was astounding because, you know, every time you have a mass shooting in the States, you know, first thing that comes out, thoughts and prayers. And then second thing, you know, Second Amendment.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to take our guns away despite something like this happening. And so I thought, I was flabbergasted really when Jacinda Ardern came out and said, you know what, we're going to ban sales of assault rifles. And I thought, she can actually do that, like that quick, that's all it takes? Just for the Prime Minister to say that? And you look at the United States and the examples, like, I mean, how many mass shootings do they have a year? And no one's ever said that.
Yeah. And you don't have to just look at the United States, but even like in Indonesia, you know, when there are, there has been instances in the past where the minorities have become victims of, you know, hate actions, hate-fueled attacks, bombings and all that. And I've never seen, you know, the head of state, the leader of the country took so much initiative and took so much, with so much conviction, you know, leading the entire country to kind of grieve together, but also heal together and take like real actions, to not kind of hide behind and not say anything because you're too afraid to offend the majority.
I know what you mean. I know, like, we've had like instances where, you know, Ahmadiyyas and Shiites have been, communities have been attacked. And if anything, the government has actually taken a harder line against the victims. You know, they've issued the joint ministerial decree, remember, about basically making it harder for these permits. People to get a, to set up a house of worship, to, you know, to worship, basically, to practice their freedom of faith.
Right. So after, you know, being disappointed over and over with this instances in our own country, looking at Jacinda is so, you know, refreshing, and like it's very inspiring.
But, and you know, it's unfortunate that it had to take a tragedy of this magnitude to sort of bring out that leadership, but I think she's conducted herself very well. She's gonna you know, she's really set an example, not just for you know, leaders in developed countries, but also for developing countries, that that can show the way forward, that this is how you should do it. Okay, so let's move on to something a little bit lighter. And Afu, you actually showed a bit of social media leadership yourself this past week. You had a trending thread. Tell us what that's about.
I did, apparently. I've been having this fatigue of talking about politics with the same routine. Of,
like, haven't we all, right?
Doing that. Yeah, exactly. So one time I was just in this Gojek ride and I was thinking about, oh, I talk about Hogwarts and Harry Potter all the time with my friends, and I've been analyzing the people around me a lot using those, you know, their four houses.
Is this a thing?
And yeah, it is a big thing, by the way. I've been talking a lot about the four Hogwarts houses, which is the Gryffindor, Slytherin, Hufflepuffs, and Ravenclaws, obviously. And so I started a thread on Twitter where I kind of sort all of the, or some Indonesian leaders into those houses, based on how I perceive them publicly, you know. So I said that Jokowi is a Hufflepuff, being the good guy next door that he is. You know what? Yeah, well, Hufflepuffs are kind of this kind, loyal, nice people that can't step on someone else's foot.
And that's the impression you get from Jokowi?
that. So I got quite a hard pushback on that. Actually, a lot of people replied and said, no, there's no way Jokowi is a Hufflepuff. He's obviously a Slytherin because he, you know.
That sounds devious.
Yeah, so Slytherin is the devious house.
Okay.
So people say that, you know, you can't be a president without passing some moral, you know, boundary or like moral complexity on your way. And he's been quite pragmatic in some of his decisions.
Yeah.
So there's been some pushback on that. And then I talk about how Ridwan Kamil is a Slytherin. I think that's pretty undebatable. And who else? Oh, Bu Sri Mulyani is Ravenclaw. And
so what is a Ravenclaw in terms of characteristics?
They're the wise, kind of wise ass, smart, loyal to logic and knowledge and truth.
Oh yeah, that sounds like her.
House. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Because she doesn't have time for your nonsense and she always chooses like the most efficient option of all. So
yeah. Facts don't care about your feelings.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's been fun. I didn't expect it to get, but I don't know if I can say that it's viral, but it gets
3,000 retweets. 3,000. I think we can call that viral.
It's okay. Yeah, it was okay. But a lot of the feedback that I get is that, you know, this is the way to talk about politics in a way that's engaging for young people.
Okay, hang on now. You haven't talked about Prabowo. Where is he?
Oh, I'm kind of avoiding. I put him in Slytherin.
Okay, so devious.
Because you know how he's been trying to become president over and over, maybe four times?
Has he been trying to become president? Oh, you must have missed it. Yeah.
Yeah, and Slytherins are known for their single-mindedness and kind of their ambition-driven resourcefulness and kind of their moral flexibility and, you know, how the end justifies the means kind of.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, so
that sounds like
this. Actually, this analysis, I gotta say, is pretty applicable in this case, right?
Right.
Okay, so I'm what you might call a muggle. that's really all I know from Harry Potter, because I've never read the books and I only ever watched the first movie.
I don't know
movie.
Why I even agreed to do this podcast. I should have asked you, but I do this, you know, as a test of friendship, like whether
really?
I can be friends with someone. So, I ask whether they read the book or at least watched the movie.
Ah, what? So we're not going to get along?
No.
Oh, damn. Yeah. I need Erin back. Okay, so yes, that's really interesting. When was this trending? A couple of days ago?
Yeah, over the weekend.
Okay, so tell us, what's your Twitter at?
At Afutami.
Afutami. Okay, so anyone interested in a Hogwarts-type analysis of Indonesia's political scene and players, check out at Afutami.
At Afutami, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
Are you on Twitter?
Yes, I am. I am on Twitter, but I don't do a lot of stuff. I recently got followed by Ferdinand Hutahian. It was just kind of...
Whoa, what did he do?
I said something not nice about Maruf Amin, but yeah.
Well done.
And so, yeah. Well, anyway, that's something else altogether.
But... Do you tweet about environmental stuff? I know you...
Yeah, I do. I do. One of the things that really caught my eye recently that's on Twitter in terms of environment is... I'm sure you've seen this. Is a Russian guy got arrested at the Bali airport trying to smuggle out an orangutan baby, which is this.
I can't wrap my head.
Yeah, and it wasn't just orangutan. There's like two tokay lizards and a couple of other lizards, and they were drugged in a suitcase, and he was going to take them out. I think, you know, we like to think of orangutans.
Are they sleeping in the suitcase?
Yeah, they were drugged out.
Okay.
Yeah, they were sedated or something like that.
Okay.
You know, we like to think of orangutans as being cuddly and, you know, they make for a nice photo op and all that. But you got to understand, when you've taken a baby orangutan from the wild, you haven't just destroyed one orangutan life. Because that baby is with its mother. And in like 99% of cases, anytime a baby orangutan is taken from the wild, the mother is killed. So that's two dead orangutans. Well, you know, the baby's not dead, but for all intents and purposes, you know, you've just killed two orangutans from the wild population. And these are critically endangered species. So critically endangered, that means basically they're one step away from being extinct in the wild.
What does one step away mean?
It's just like one catastrophe away. And so right now the officials in Indonesia, they're trying to figure out where this person got this orangutan from.
Did they figure that out yet?
They haven't figured it out. And you know, it's he said he got it from a friend who bought it in Jakarta. If he bought it in Jakarta, I can tell you where he got it. He got it at the Pramuka Bird Market.
Oh, really?
Okay? Yeah.
They sell orangutans?
They sell orangutans. It's an open secret. You know, they won't show them on display like they do for most other animals that they show and that they sell over there. But it is, it does happen. And I actually once, like many moons ago, tried to sort of undercover into the market and sort of got busted out. So...
Were you on a journalist mission?
Yes, I was. But I got found out and it sort of turned ugly. But let's not get into that.
Okay, that's for another episode.
Yeah, so let's just say stop, you know, trying to make pets out of orangutans. They did not make good pets and they absolutely do not want anything to do with you. So, yeah. Okay, we're going to get into our main story, our main topic today is about hoaxes. And hoaxes, well, let's start with the polling. Okay, we had the one that really made waves this past week is the polling from Litbang Kompas. 49.2% for Jokowi, 37.4% from Prabowo. The big news, obviously, is that the gap has actually shrunk since their last poll. What do you make of that?
It reminds me of the final month of the 2016 election in the US of Hillary versus Trump and how most of the polls are very optimistic about Hillary's chance of winning.
Right.
I think the numbers are up to like 70 to 90% in most of the pollings. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, the next morning, I think it was November 4th, people were shocked because the outcome of the election was not what they was expecting, which is that Trump, you know, won.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been thinking, so I also come from this like public policy background and we talked a lot at school about, you know, how the these kind of polls actually affect the real outcomes and some of the issues with it, some of the biases or like sampling errors that might affect its accuracy.
Right.
In predicting the outcome of an election. So I would say that, you know, with this polling, it so any single polling doesn't really mean a lot. I think the only way to improve your accuracy, at least this very smart guy, Nate Silver, who wrote
Nate Silver from 538.
From 538, exactly.
Yeah.
Said that basically in order to improve your accuracy, you need to kind of look at the trend of like several, like the more polls, the more and the more, the bigger population or sample that you have, the better.
Right.
And so
but famously, Nate Silver himself actually got it wrong, right?
Yeah, yeah. On the 2016 election.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. He did. But he also wrote a very long article to make sense of it. He argued that because of his approach in kind of looking at the historical trend, his or 538 is the least wrong. Well, of course he'd like to say that, but the 538 was the only one that predicts 30% of chance for Trump winning. The others are way, you know, down.
Yeah, I remember like New York Times was like 90 up to 90% or something.
Yeah,
and they had like that infamous needle on their website.
Yes, yes, yeah, exactly.
But there is obviously a big difference between, you know, how the election works in the US and here. Obviously in the US they had the Electoral College and Hillary did actually win the popular vote.
She did, that's true.
And if that was in Indonesia, she would have won the presidency outright. Obviously here we have the popular vote. I mean, is there an applicable lesson there that we should be learning?
I think there is still, in that, you know, polls like this, the way that they do the survey oftentimes is they visit the houses or they call to the homes of these houses. And the type of demography that responds to this kind of survey might not represent the whole population, like might not be representative enough. Because most of the maybe like middle class voters or, you know, I don't know, millennials and whatnot might not be as represented in those polls because they're not at home during, you know, office hours, for example. So there's still, I mean, as long as they also count the kind of, how do you say it, like the chance of error. And usually that's at around like 5% maybe from the initial number. Then you can still have a reasonable prediction without being too kind of invested or too certain of this number.
Okay. I just, you know, going back to the Compass poll, I think one of the things that I found interesting about the Compass poll was that it's the only new survey, the only new major survey, I should say, that's actually put Jokowi below 50%.
Mm.
So, like, in this past month alone, because we've had SMRC, we've got Charta Politica, Indobarometer. Okay, SMRC had him at 54.9%. Charta Politica, 53.6%. Indobarometer, 50.2%. LSI, 58.7%. So all of these have him above 50%. So basically, they have him winning the election outright. Compass, the only one, put him under 50.
Right.
And Compass is also the one with that shows him with the smallest gap between Jokowi and Prabowo. I'm just curious. Okay, if we're taking a look at gaps, right? We're looking at the distance that the Prabowo has to close within these last few weeks. Okay, in 2014 the gap was so much tighter. Okay, anything from 2% to 7% between the two candidates in 2014,
mm-hmm.
and Jokowi ended up winning by 6%.
Right.
So the polling was, like, you know, within the margin of error.
Mm.
Here, the gap is anything between 11%, so that's Compass, to 21% SMRC Indobarometer, 27% LSI. Is there any chance that Prabowo is going to close that gap?
You know, I don't know. I think it depends on what happens in the next 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
To the undecided voters, right? Because I think in most of those polls, the number of undecided voters are still quite mm-hmm. high, maybe 12 to 15%.
Yes.
So I don't know what, you know, campaign strategy that the Camp O2 has mm-hmm. that will flip these swing voters to their camp. But if they do a really good job and they have to really, you know, put their resources and try, mm-hmm. you know, really good campaign strategy, it might. I don't know. But
does a hoax count as a good campaign strategy?
Ouch. Actually, it works.
It works
in several countries in the past year, several years, we've seen that it worked.
Yeah. You know, one could argue that in the U.S. it worked. You know, with the Facebook,
and then in Brazil, you have Bolsonaro.
Yeah. What makes people susceptible to this kind of thing?
Yeah. So I've come across this actually two papers that's been looking at the kind of neurobiology of people who tend to be progressives and people who tend to be conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting part of the research, I don't want to make this, you know, kind of like a Nazi biogenetic argument for mm-hmm. which, you know, some people are better than others,
mm-hmm.
but just, I think evolutionarily or like based on the culture that we're raised in, these papers argue that some people have a more sensitive amygdala, mm-hmm. which is the part of your brain that responds to fear. So for some of these people, when you activate, when you use false stories or hoaxes that, you know, are fear-mongering, that creates some sense of fear, like, oh, if you vote for this candidate, then something really bad is going to happen to your mm-hmm. family, then it instantly activates the amygdala of these people who already have, you know, the tendency or more sensitive amygdala in a way that makes it really effective, a really effective campaign.
Okay, but, you know, the amygdala, this is basically the part of the brain that's the fight or flight response,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
The lizard brain, right?
Yes.
It's the most primitive part. I'm just throwing this out here. Would not your more rational, the rational part of your brain sort of take over and say, nah, this is not real?
I'm not expert enough to answer to that accurately. But the other part of the research is that it says the other part of the brain is the insula. Mm-hmm. So insula responds to or allows you to empathize better.
Okay.
So in some people, their insula are more sensitive or more active in a way that they respond to stories of oppressions. They respond to stories of, you know, whether there's justice and fairness, whether minorities are being protected.
Mm-hmm.
So even from these, you know, neurological differences, you can see how some people might have inclination to adopt certain political values mm-hmm. more than others. So that's interesting. So I wouldn't argue about rationality here,
mm-hmm.
but more to, you know, the kind of stories that appeal to different people can really affect how they vote. So I think a lot of the campaigns that we've seen in, you know, Trump's case and then Bolsonaro, they really use this, you know, fear mongering campaign, mm-hmm. saying like, oh, you know, the Chinese are taking your jobs, and the Mexicans are threatening us.
Hey, the Chinese taking your jobs is actually a theme that's come up here as well, right?
That's true.
Right.
Actually, yeah.
And in fact, a lot of the hoaxes from the 2014 campaign are being recycled here. Like now you've got the PKI, the Communist Party thing, coming up again. Obviously, Jokowi is a little bit more immune to the anti-Islam, anti-ulema claim, hoax. But why are people still trotting these out?
I don't know. I think they're, you know, putting their bets on the same story. Like maybe they look at how Trump and, you know, Bolsonaro and the use of fire hose of falsehood in the international politics works, and they try to bring some of the strategy in. Mm-hmm. And with the issue of Chinese workers, it's kind of my biggest like pet peeve, because like when people tell that story, they tend to focus on the image. They visualize this image where, you know, all these Chinese people are coming in and taking their jobs. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the actual number, like the statistics,
it's minuscule,
Indonesia
isn't it?
Has, yeah, exactly. Indonesia has the lowest percentage of foreign workers from the overall kind of workforce, which is at 0.01%.
Yeah.
Which is very low. Yeah.
Is it... I'm guessing the emphasis on Chinese is maybe because it's tied to the Red Scare, you know, the communist threat. Very silly. But then the hoax is also cut both ways. You know, the last time Prabowo's campaign was really heavy on the on Jokowi being anti-Islam, and now obviously he's being hit by claims that, you know, he's not Muslim enough himself. I mean, where does he Jumatan? Does he know how to pray? Does he know how to read the Quran? So, you know, it does come back and bite you. Mm. And I think he's they're finding out the hard way. But I mean, what other interesting like types of hoaxes have you seen?
I've come across this video of, I think, an ama'ama who kind of, you know, stopped by you know, someone's door and told them that basically if Jokowi won, then this country is gonna be a liberal country, and you'll never hear azan anymore, and extramarital sex will be legalized, you know, and whatnot.
Yeah.
That was,
so again, they're playing into the fear of
exactly,
and this is a really primal fear, because anything to do with religion is obviously gonna have a pretty strong play down here. So is it effective? Does it work?
I guess we'll see. April 17th.
I mean, it took Prabowo pretty close in 2014, right? I mean, that was the closest election we've ever had. It was 6%, less than 7%.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is calling these stories hoax, because like hoax is not an everyday language for baby boomer generation.
Right.
You know, people talk about like maybe it using kind of their own framing, the language that they use, it should be called fitna, or because then people will get it. Oh yeah, all of these are like bad stories that people make up,
right?
And it's like my religion doesn't like it.
So there is an organization called Masyarakat Anti Fitna Indonesia. They're actually doing a pretty good job of scanning hoaxes, and I think they found that huge difference between the number of let's call it fitna. huge difference between the number of fitna that's registered, like pretty much all of last year since the candidates registered, and in just the first 2 months of this year. So, you know, we can expect things to heat up, right? These last few weeks.
Yeah. So the idea of fact checking these fitnas, right? I'm quite pessimistic about how effective that is. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, how people have confirmation bias, and it might actually backfire. There are stories of anti-vaccine mother who, you know, got I think her son infected by the virus, and like she still insisted that, you know, this is not because I didn't take the vaccine, this was something else. So like once you've set in stone your beliefs and your values and your choice in terms of the political candidates, no matter what you say in terms of facts, no matter how many facts, numbers, whatever you say to the other person, they will always find a reason to defend their initial position.
Right.
I mean, their brain automatically search for a different...
Yeah, confirmation bias. So,
exactly.
I mean, we see that so many times. Every time, like, let's say going back to the Trump comparison, every time Trump makes a speech, you know, all these news organizations, political, CNN, whatever, they're always doing some like real-time fact-checking.
Yeah.
No one's paying attention.
Exactly. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
What will be effective, I think, is counter storytelling.
Right.
So telling, you know, an alternative narrative,
mm-hmm.
where you don't negate what's been said with facts per se, but you built your own story of, you know, it's not about that. It's about something else.
Right.
I think that has a better chance of, you know, changing people's minds.
To that end, though, do you see any of these? I mean, the campaigns started in earnest, like literally yesterday, the open campaign season. Do you actually see these either camp doing a more positive sort of style of campaigning?
Yeah, I think officially the people at the top of the kind of campaign structure,
mm-hmm.
can only do the positive stuff, right?
Right.
I mean, officially they make the videos that have positive stories or messages. But the real problem is the underground kind of grassroots,
right,
activities,
yeah.
of their supporters who, yeah. are almost...
And these guys have been at it since last year, right?
Exactly.
Well, the official campaign only started yesterday.
Yeah,
so.
And the official campaign will always deny, you know, being affiliated with,
exactly.
oh, those hoaxes are not from us. It's, mm-hmm. you know, like someone else. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess you could say they condone it. Oh, well, not officially, but they'll condone it because it, you know, it serves their needs, and it will continue, and they'll have plausible deniability, and the Indonesian voter, I think, will be worse off for it if we continue down this path of fitna, basically.
Right, and it's so disappointing that the political process can't be more educating,
yes.
to the masses, right? Because, you know, being the opposition, you do have kind of this additional burden of proof against the incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to prove that they didn't do their best, that,
right.
you know, that you have to critique their work. And in that sense, I mean, in political science, you know that the incumbent always has the upper hand,
yes.
because they have the resources and kind of chance to prove what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, you know, I think that Prabowo and Sandy could have done, or their team could have done a way better job at criticizing,
right.
the current, the incumbent, because there are, you know, valid criticism on, mm-hmm. what they've been doing.
They, yeah, they for can, sure.
Right. But instead, they've been kind of feeding their supporters with these false stories, you know, cherry picking different data, mm-hmm. that supports their cause. I mean, sure, values are kind of the bedrock of a political campaign process. So you can't expect a fully objective, like, mm-hmm. 100% accurate information from both camps, because they will frame their stories to serve their needs.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, framing your stories is different from telling very blatant lies, mm-hmm. you know, hoaxes, fitnas. I'm disappointed because I think they, especially the opposition camp, can do a better job at criticizing the incumbent.
How does the KPU fit into all this? They're supposed to be the referees. They're supposed to be the ones managing this whole thing. But I haven't seen much in the way of political education from them.
Right. I don't know if they've made one of those PSAs. I think, like, during the their main, or like one of their flagship activities, I guess, throughout this political process is the debates.
Yeah.
And I think somewhat they've done quite a good job in kind of designing the process to allow more dialogues. I think, mm-hmm. this was a new kind of method compared to the previous election,
yeah,
year,
yeah.
where it was really set out like, 2 minutes versus 2 minutes. So there's no like direct interaction. And
yeah, there was no back and forth, right.
Exactly, but now they allow it. So I'm kind of happy with how the debate went so far, but beyond that, yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard of what they've been,
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, so KPU obviously has a role to play in terms of tackling the hoaxes. The campaigns themselves, they should take some responsibility, I think. Other than that, I don't see how the issue gets solved anytime. Before the next election, really.
Right.
Because, yeah. What we're seeing is a repeat of the last time. And I fear what is going to be something that we see in 2024 again.
Right. But from personal experience, I think at least I feel like KPU has been doing a good job in facilitating an easy voting process. Mm-hmm. Like if you're if you have a KTP elsewhere and you know you're based here, yeah. I think they've made quite a smooth, at least from personal experience,
right.
Process of how you know you get to vote in Jakarta even if you don't come from here. So in that sense, I kind of praise them for.
Yeah, and I think we should take that as an endorsement of the KTP being the one super card to rule them all. Okay, Afu, thank you so much for coming in tonight. I know it's Monday night. Traffic is horrible in this part of town.
Yeah, this is a fun conversation to have that I don't usually have on a Monday evening.
But it's good, right? It's good. Challenging. And you know, you brought a lot of insights that I think we'll find very useful, you know, over the next few weeks.
I hope so.
Yeah, so...
And, you know, Aaron or yourself, if you need a guest host again.
Absolutely. Actually, we might need one next week because I am not in.
Oh.
I will be away and Erin will actually be back. So
does Erin read Harry Potter?
Yes, she does.
I need to know. Okay, great. Okay, in that case.
In that case, yeah, you'll have a non-muggle here and so that'll be better for your purpose. So next week, and actually next week we've got a surprise guest coming on. I don't even know who it is. That's how much surprise it is. Topic for discussion will be the fourth of the 5-day presidential debates. This one will be between Jokowi and Prabowo. None of their sidekicks will be joining the debate. They're going to be talking about a pretty heavy issue, which is security, that sort of thing. Look out for that. Stick around for that. And hopefully we get Afu back.
Fingers crossed.
So thank you so much. This has, as always, has been a presentation of Indonesia dan Lain-Lain.
Indonesia dan Lain-Lain is a production of Gentle Media.
Our producers are Lisa Siregar, Cristobal Pilar, and Budi Darmawan.
Our editor is Satria Utomo. Dada!
Sampai jumpa!